Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Mike Kresnick, and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune and Pastor Dusty White of Coramdale Church and Pastor Chris Hemmelman of First City Church. Every Wednesday, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today, we're talking about network evangelism.
We got the whole band back together, guys. Welcome back.
Good to be back.
Good to be back.
Chris. How long were you gone for?
I was out for 2 weeks.
Oh,
2 weeks off, actually.
Chris was out for like 6 weeks or
something. I was gone for a while.
Yeah, you were.
Glad to have you guys back. We're going to talk about evangelism.
Mm-hmm.
Evangelism.
We're doing evangelism.
Listen, this is a word and a concept that I have some tension over. I'll tell you why. When we planted Coramdale in 2005, we intentionally avoided the language of evangelism and we used the language of mission instead. So, not entirely separate ideas, but we were coming out of a context in which people had been taught that evangelism was an event. It was like a thing that you did that had a special time and a special strategy attached to it. And we wanted to sort of capture the idea, hey, all of life, you're a missionary. You like live on mission. So we really, really shied away from the word evangelism. And I would say have until this point. This is a word we don't frequently use at Coramdale. However, I think it's a word we need to recapture. I think there's been enough time to sort of decompress from the negative stereotypes that got built around it that I think we can come back to it. This topic has particularly been spurred by an article by Tony Merida on the Gospel Coalition website called Don't Overcomplicate Evangelism. And Tony has some helpful things to say about evangelism. And so in this podcast, we're essentially just going to sort of process this article together. If you want to read it, you can go find it. And if you don't want to read it, we'll probably, if you just listen to this, we're going to summarize the essential things he has to say about it. I think this is a really helpful post for the average Christian. Let's start with some stories. Let me tell you why I had a certain connotation around the word evangelism. And again, when I talk about these things, I'm not judging anyone's intentions or anyone's hearts. I'm just telling you the experiences I had in light of that. So like every experience I've had with evangelism was motivated by Christians really wanting to see other people meet Jesus. So that's never a bad longing, right? But some of our strategies sometimes can become very odd for that. So when I was growing up, we had a program called Evangelism Explosion. And it was on Thursday night. Yes.
Boom!
It was on Thursday nights. You showed up at church. There was like an hour of, or maybe less than an hour, maybe 40 minutes of training in the classroom. Then we would actually go out and visit people who had visited the church the week before. So visitors would fill out these contact cards. Hey, I came to church. We would literally show up at their door, team of three people, knock, knock, knock. Hey, we're here to follow up. Thanks for visiting. And, you know, can we sit down and share the gospel with you? And we were literally just asking permission to share the gospel and then walking through a simple gospel presentation and inviting them to respond to the gospel. We saw people converted through this. Like one of my deepest and longest lasting friendships in life is a friend of mine from high school who he became a Christian in his living room when we visited him in one of these teams. So there's lasting fruit from this. But that's what evangelism meant to me. It was like this program that we went and did on Thursday nights, and it had a particular strategy of going and knocking on someone's door and saying, can I tell you the gospel, or can we talk about what the Bible says about Jesus? And so it had a very particular way of doing it. That was also true when I was in campus ministry. The strategy was different, but it was sort of a particular way of thinking about evangelism. And so those were sort of my experiences that shaped when the word evangelism gets said, that's what comes to my mind. And that's not a bad thing, but I think that's a very, very small piece of what it means to be an agent of redemption, be a missionary for Jesus, think about how the gospel shapes all of life. And so I think for a long time, I sort of shied away from evangelism. And Tony Merida in his article mentions when we hear the word evangelism, there's two primary forms many of us think of. One is event evangelism, Billy Graham crusade, et cetera. And one is what he calls cold call evangelism, which is more the door-to-door thing that I was talking about, or what we used to call randoms in campus ministry, where you just literally would walk out on campus and find a random person and start a conversation with them and seek to share the gospel. We did this probably every week for the whole time I was in campus ministry. We just go to randoms. And, you know, sometimes the Lord brought fruit from that, but it was always awkward. It was like, hey, I've never met you before. How's it going? You want to talk about Jesus? You know, it's like you're going from 0 to 60 pretty fast.
Yeah. Where do you think that comes from? Like that model of evangelism, event or cold call?
Wow. I don't know. I think we'll actually talk about that on the next podcast. I think there are some things historically in American evangelicalism that teed that up a certain way, especially the event evangelism. And I think the cold call thing, I think that made sense in the 1950s. I think like our grandparents' generation, it was just like people came to your door to sell you, you know, newspapers and to sell you milk and to sell, you know, which wasn't weird to have door-to-door people. And you didn't see them as like salesmen that you want to slam the door as fast as possible. It was a little more of a, you know, think about how the mm-hmm. older neighborhoods have front mm-hmm. porches mm-hmm. and yeah. the newer neighborhoods yeah. have back porches, you know. In the older neighborhoods, it was, you know, it was normal. Sit on your front porch and somebody come up and start a conversation. So I think like my grandparents' generation, those models of evangelism came out of a real concern for how can we engage people with the gospel. And in a culture that is a little more Christian, a little less hostile to church, and a little more sort of front porchy, maybe that works.
Mm-hmm. The church world that I grew up in had a very strong, like, go door to door, like soul winning.
Oh, yeah, soul winning.
Kind of the fundamental Baptist. And I often heard it kind of connected to that the apostles would go from house to house teaching.
Oh, they kind proof of, texted it
yeah,
for you.
Yeah, and so in some of them, they're like, I don't know if that's the exact same thing going
yeah,
on
Acts
there.
2, they went house to house.
But they at least were trying to sort of ground a model in Scripture, for better or for worse.
My first event evangelistic thing was about 10 minutes after I was a Christian.
Wow.
I was asked to speak at this high school thing. I became a Christian in high school. And which was strategic.
Like, hey, you're a Christian now. Come up here on stage.
It was very strategic for this high school ministry because I became a Christian after the sophomore year of high school. And so I had all these non-Christian friends. And then my church that I was a part of did these huge events. And so there's this huge basketball tournament. It was the best one we did all year. And it ended with a dunk contest. And then all my friends were at the high school that were dunking the most in the city at
yeah,
that time.
Yeah, boy.
And so I remember having, like, a ton of people come to this. And then I was inviting people because I was speaking at this thing. And it ended with me, like, first time ever being in front of people was like 500 high school students.
Wow.
Probably 100 of them were peers, you know.
Man.
And I just was doing what these pastors were asking me to do, which wasn't to what you said earlier, like they had good intention. And I remember thinking, well, this is what it means to be a Christian. And wow. apparently now I'm a leader. And so I'm going to speak. And I remember being petrified over this whole idea.
Wow.
I'd never done the door-to-door
thing. You're
like
a Big Ten evangelist, man.
Yeah, about 10 minutes after becoming a Christian. And then, but you know what it did, though? It really kind of confused my real friends.
Mm.
Because I had these non-Christian friends, and then I had Christian friends, and then now all of a sudden I was trying to get them to seal the deal with Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd only been a Christian for a little while, and these people knew me pretty well. Like, hey, man, you're kind of new to this, so I don't know if you should be, you know, waving that Jesus flag so high because mm-hmm. I know about your past. So it caused some tension, but over the long haul, it's been good.
I just have to say, having a dunk contest is a brilliant way to reach high school male athletes. Like, who doesn't want to win the dunk contest at the local church? That's just tapping into all the weird ego trip, athletic testosterone that exists in a 16-year-old basketball player and saying, hey, man, I know you play on Friday nights, but how about if you come win the dunk contest at my church?
Mm-hmm.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
Good job, youth leader.
You know, give them pizza and soda. Let's go.
I was a part of a clown ministry when I was a child.
I didn't know what you were going to say next, but that's not what I was expecting.
And the whole premise was, hey, we're going to dress up as clowns, do the clown bit, and then at the end of the clown bit, share the gospel with the kids. And
I
so,
know this about you. You have a clown pass.
Is this why you won't like put on a Halloween mask? And
clowns
like
terrify me. Let's just say that for many reasons. And this being one of them. And the evangelism for me growing up was like, hey, let's put on a rock concert and then tag on the gospel at the end, kind of like a bait and switch type of thing. So when I think of evangelism, it's kind of event evangelism, but kind of the bait and switch, like, hey, we're going to trick them into being here and then share the gospel with them.
So Tony Merida rightly acknowledges, hey, those models, the event evangelism and sort of cold call, door-to-door type things, those approaches do not work in a post-Christian context. They just don't. Or at least they are not going to be as effective. And he's exactly right about that. That's not a bash on those models. It just means any model for how to share the gospel has to take into account the cultural context. And so he wants to suggest that we should think instead about what he calls network evangelism. So think about a social network. Think about Facebook. Think about, you know, Instagram, Pinterest, whatever. you have this network of connections to all these various people, and some of the things you post they like, and some of the things you post they say nothing about, and there's a sense of like there's a web of relationships that sort of connect you to other people. That's how he wants to think about evangelism, is to say, what if that in a post-Christian world where people are much more skeptical and critical of any truth claim, the thing that's actually the most sticky in terms of powerful evangelism is just leveraging the power of social network. I'm not talking about the tool of social network. I don't mean leveraging social media. I mean just thinking that you have a network of relationships, and within that network, your calling is to be a faithful Christian. And that part of how faithful evangelism happens is when people in your social network, your group of friends or whatever, become pulled into a web of relationships with lots of different Christians who they respect or they like, or there's a positive experience they have, it creates a opportunity for the gospel to become really relevant to that person, and it creates an opportunity for evangelism. So he references particularly the book Cities of God by Rodney Stark. This is a book on how Christianity grew in the early Roman Empire. Because think about it, after Jesus' time, Christianity is a persecuted religion. They're a minority sect. It's not like, you know, you can drop a church on every corner and people are coming going, when can I get baptized, right? It's a very hostile culture. And he says, as Rodney Stark is a historian and sociologist, and so he's studying the social growth of Christianity. And he says in this book, social networks are the basic mechanism through which conversion takes place. Most conversions are not produced by professional missionaries conveying a new message, but by rank and file church members who share their faith with their friends and relatives. Although the very first Christian converts in the West may have been by full-time missionaries, think of the Apostle Paul and his missionary journeys, the conversion process soon became self-sustaining as new converts accepted the obligation to spread their faith and did so by missionizing their immediate circle of intimates or friends. Okay. So he's saying, hey, the way the church grew in the early centuries is just by people were connected to other people. And sort of like you're talking about, Dusty, in a little less of an awkward way, someone who became a Christian and had a bunch of non-Christian friends, there's just a natural connection those friends have to this new believer, and that creates an opportunity for the gospel to travel across that relational network. And so Tony Merida is suggesting to us, hey, instead of trying to do evangelistic events, or instead of thinking about like evangelism as a door-to-door or sort of cold call or sort of salesy kind of a strategy, just think about, What are the networks of relationships that you exist in? And how can you have a level of gospel intentionality in those networks? And so where I really want to get to, guys, is at the end of his article, he lists five types of networks and then five things you can do, five tasks, if you will. And I think these are really practical and helpful. And so for everybody listening, I hope this gives you a clear vision of, okay, good, here's some people I'm connected to and here's what I can do with those relationships. So first of all, the five networks, the five webs of relationships you have. Number one, you have a familial network, people you are related to in your family. Two, you have a geographical network, the people who live around you in your neighborhood or share your geography. Third, you have a vocational network, the people at your workplace, the people you interact with in your job. Fourth, you have a recreational network, people you hang out with, do recreation with. And then five, you have a commercial network, people you see at shops or you interact with in the world of commerce and, you know, buying and selling and those kinds of things. So there's your five networks: family, geography, vocation, recreation, and commerce. And he says, think about what are the connections you have in those five networks. And he says one of the things he's done in his church in Raleigh, North Carolina, is to encourage church members to identify at least five people in each of those networks. Or if you don't have five, identify two, right? Just identify who are the people that are in my familial network, in my geography, in my vocation, people I hang out with recreationally, and people I see at shops. And then once you identify those people, do one of these five things.
So the first one, pray for them. And he has this great little quote from C.S. Lewis here about the experience of praying for those that do not know Christ. This is what C.S. Lewis says: I have two lists of names in my prayers, those who are conversions I pray for and those whose conversions I give thanks. The little trickle of transferences from list A to list B is a great comfort. And really, this is, if you've done this in community, it is really cool to see how, if you've consistently prayed for someone, how the Lord has been at work in their life and even brought them to Christ. And so the experience of just regularly praying for these people. Second one is to invite them. So invite them to all kinds of different things, over for dinner, to go play sports, to go to a movie, even to come to church or a church event, but just be regularly inviting them. Third one, serve them. Just find ways to be able to bless and serve people consistently, babysitting, picking up groceries, cutting grass, whatever, you name it. There's an endless list of ways to serve people. The fourth one, give resources to them. And I think this is an interesting aspect too of, hey, share an article, a book, maybe a podcast, and say, hey, would you want to discuss this? Would you think this would be an interesting topic to dive into? And then five, of course, share the gospel with them. Look for ways in which you can one, just display your faith in front of people, talk about your faith in front of those folks that you know, and then find ways to really share the gospel, open up the gospel and different truths.
What are some ways that you guys have done one of these five things and seen like fruit from it?
Yeah. So, the second one, the invitation thing, is a category that I've experienced in some cool ways and really try to press at First City. And here's kind of been my experience with this is the job that I had. Just before I got into ministry, I worked for an education nonprofit, and I had a coworker who, just through a number of conversations, was able to talk a lot about Christianity and share my faith with. And she was super, super liberal, but she had been exposed to some Christianity, so she was curious. And so we had some really good conversations, and she appreciated my willingness to be honest about sort of the sins of the church and where, you know, Christians could be a little weird about things. So we had great conversations, and we were actually both transitioning out of that company at the same time. And so I remember talking to her and say, hey, if you ever have any questions, want to chat further, just let me know. And she said, hey, you're my favorite Christian. And so definitely. And I just remember thinking, I am not unusual in my community, in my church. And it just, the thought occurred to me is probably for a lot of you that have friends with people who don't know the Lord, you may be kind of that one Christian friend that's the exception. Like you're not the weird one like everyone else, but you're really not. Like you know other Christians who are like you. And so the more you can pull those non-Christian friends into community to say, hey, there's a whole community here. Yeah, we're messy, we're sinful, but I'm not that unusual, and get them in community. The more you can do that's super important. And so, you know, Mindy and I have seen that happen when we've invited non-Christian friends into, you know, at church, whether it be, you know, church events, like, you know, use that term broadly, like most of the people there are from church. So whether it's just hanging out at people's homes, barbecue, cookout, going to the park, whatever, and just getting them around other Christians to see, hey, this is what Christian community looks like. And it feels really normal in a lot of ways, has been pretty, pretty powerful to just see the effect that's had on people. So inviting people is a huge category for us at First City.
I don't do any of these five things as diligently as I should, but I'll tell you two cool stories. About a month ago, I ran into a friend of mine named Tony, who I see occasionally around town. Friend in the loose sense of the word. We don't hang out all the time, but here's the interesting thing about Tony. I've known Tony for 14 years, and the way I met him was he was the barista at the Starbucks that I used to go to all the time. And so I just struck up a rapport with him. He was very verbally and vocally not a Christian. He got engaged to a girl. And similarly, Chris, he said to me, hey, you're the only pastor I know that I trust and who isn't weird. Would you marry us? And I was like, sure. Because my conviction is I'll marry two Christians or two non-Christians. I won't marry a Christian to a non-Christian. So Tony and his fiance were both like very vocally not Christians. And I was like, sure, I'd be happy to marry you. So I showed up and officiated this wedding at the First Unitarian Church. And it was like, I mean, I was the only gospel-believing person in the room, I think. I mean, it was a crowd of people I usually do not find myself in front of. And man, so I did that wedding the same year we planted Quorum Deo. So that was 2005. That was 13 years ago. Every time I see Tony in the city, we have an instant conversation, and it's always meaningful and warm. Like he sees me as a guy that he respects and loves because of that moment in his life, and I always love to run into him. And he hasn't become a Christian yet. But there's this, so what's funny about that is like it's really a commercial network. It's that last category of people I see at shops, but he's really become like a friend, you know, and the rapport we have is deeper because of the role that I played in his story at that particular moment. And so I always ask him about his wife, and we talk about our families. And I mean, you know, it's one of those, like, I run into him and we end up having a 10 or 15 minute conversation and just catching up on life. And, you know, I'm praying for him, probably not as diligently as I need to be. I don't have my two lists like C.S. Lewis describes there, so that's good conviction for me. But man, I pray for Tony and pray for God's work in his life. The other interesting story that happened to me, this is probably 2 years ago now, I was in a gospel community and the guy who was hosting that said, hey, let's have a Super Bowl party and let's invite some friends and neighbors and, you know, just a good way to do mission together. So he invites this guy that he works with. I show up at the Super Bowl party and I'm like, hey, don't you live down the street from me? And the guy's like, yeah, you look familiar. And so turns out this guy lives five houses down the street from me. So my geographical network overlapped with my friend's vocational network, and neither of us knew that. Like, he was like, wait, you know him too? And I was like, well, yeah, he's my neighbor. And so, like, there's this weird, like, social triangle that got created simply because both of us were sort of trying to live in different networks, and just, you know, those networks ended up overlapping. That's the kind of weird thing that happens. This is why Facebook has all this weird data on you, is because they know all these networks in your life that overlap. We don't know them always, but God knows them. And so it's really interesting to think that, you know, when you do something simple like invite a work associate to a Super Bowl party, that work associate ends up living down the street from someone else in your gospel community. And all of a sudden now there's two points of contact that person has with a gospel believing Christian that begin to provide soil for the gospel to take root.
Yeah. Speaking of neighbors, I mean, it was just funny how quickly it got out when we moved into our neighborhood, how quickly it got out that I was a pastor. And most of the neighbors were like cool with that, because it's like, oh, that family's not going to party and make a lot of noise. And so everybody was very warm and inviting. But it's been really cool how just that knowledge has opened up conversations with several of our neighbors. And we've had one neighbor that has come to First City a couple times, and it has really even asked Mindy for counsel. Mindy gave her a Bible, and so she's reading through it and asking Mindy questions. One time she was just driving by her house and just stopped in the middle of the street because Mindy was in the front yard, and they just had like a conversation, like blocking traffic for like 10 minutes. So it's just been cool to see how just even those dynamics, just kind of openly saying, hey, I'm a pastor and we're just going to be friendly and we're going to love people in the neighborhood. And hey, when people have spiritual angst, they go to the pastor. And so it's been fun in that way to see.
One way that Jen and I have been able to do this kind of thing is the serving them. So specifically in our geographical network, you know, talking about neighbors, we noticed a while back that a neighbor had It's a Boy balloons on their porch. And so we're like, oh, cool, like a new baby. And so out of Jenny's generosity, we just gave them a baby gift. And out of that action formed a relationship that we've had with them over 7 years. And so we've been able to have spiritual conversations and be in each other's birthday parties and form deep friendship with them. And it gives us a context to pray for them and have spiritual conversations.
We moved a couple years ago, and I've been convicted, actually. One of his points here, the third point is to serve them. And I was actually convicted moving into this particular house because our neighbors were pretty well connected and served one another pretty well. And I started thinking, like, man, we got to, like, almost break into this service culture already that we're not a part of. And so I think it's interesting sometimes when non-Christians
are outdoing
us,
yeah, right,
in service in our neighborhoods and in community. But just the other day, I was overjoyed to come home. I was running some errands with some other kids or something, and I came home, and my wife was cutting the hair of some neighbor kids on our back deck, which was really cool. My wife does pretty good at that. And I really feel like the best way to evangelize is to get to invite people in to his second thing, Chris, what you were talking about, to invite people in, but then also get them connected to my friends.
Yeah. Let the networks overlap.
Yeah, let the network do its job. So, like, I remember, Mike, even having you when we had that, threw that little party for my wife, and we had some of our neighbors come to that. And I was like, hey, Mike, would you go talk to those people? Because most of these people are church people, and it'd be great if I was the only person not talking to them.
And we did housework together a couple weeks before that, and so we already had like a little bit of a connection there.
Yeah, and I think inviting, when you're remodeling or you need a tool, don't go buy it. Go ask your neighbor.
Yeah, exactly.
And then they love to serve you that way. Yeah. So that's been really good and fun.
I think sometimes we have the hardest time or the most angst about moving to that fifth category of share the gospel with them. Like, so most of us don't have a hard time inviting people to things, serving people, you know, helping people however we can. Most of us are generous hearted people. But when it gets to like, what, how do I share the gospel with someone? Here's some interesting things that Tony says in this post underneath this category or underneath this fifth task, share the gospel. Here's some ideas. Look for various places where you can talk about your faith. Let your friend know that you are part of a church and see if they ask questions. That's an easy one. Just to say, hey, man, do you go to church anywhere? Mm-hmm. No. Oh, I go to, I'm part of this church, you know, Cormdale or First City, whatever. And just see if that, you know, if that ends the conversation, great. But it's just a balloon you can put up and say, does that create any questions? Listen to their problems with real concern. Share some of your own struggles and talk about how you deal with them in light of your faith. Simply ask them what they believe and just let them talk. All of these are steps towards sharing the gospel, right? If I say, hey, tell me what you believe about God, and I just listen. I haven't yet said, hey, Jesus died for your sins and you're a sinner. I haven't done the gospel presentation, but man, I've taken that conversation to a level of depth and a level of meaning that that opens the door to that kind of gospel opportunity. So sometimes what we need to do is figure out how to take the dialogue to a deeper level. You know, we have these relationships that exist with various neighbors that we serve each other. And if I need a snowblower, I can go borrow it, you know, but to get that conversation to like, hey, let's talk about God. Now, you know, that's another layer of depth. And so we just need to be intentional and thoughtful about how can we take that next step in that conversation to try to draw that out. Here's a funny story I had. This is one of my favorite stories from the last couple of years. I was flying back from Seattle, flew out there to do a wedding, flying back, sitting next to this girl on the plane. I know every pastor has a story about sharing the gospel with somebody on an airplane. I'm not that guy. I'm like, earbuds in, read a book, don't talk to me. Let's not pretend we're friends. Let's not pretend we're friends. We're just going to sit next to each other for 2 hours and then we're never going to talk again.
Right? I've flown with you. I know this is true.
Thank you. I'll take, I don't, I won't take that personally, Chris. I know that you know I'm an introvert. So turns out I you know, strike up this conversation with this woman sitting next to me. And she just says, you know, out of like the classic small talk, what do you do? And I say, I'm a pastor at a church. And she just like lights up like, oh, we're about to have a conversation. Cause she was like super hostile to the gospel, had really bad experiences with the church and was really interested in talking about that. And so we began this 2 hour conversation that was all initiated by her, but it led to, I mean, I shared the gospel in a more complete way than I probably have in a couple of years. Just talking with her about why I believe what I do about Jesus and why the death and resurrection of Christ is necessary and all these things. And it just came out of me saying, I'm a pastor. And, you know, that just opened up the conversation. So it was occasionally the Holy Spirit teased that up where it's not you going, hey, Mike, can I talk to you about the Lord Jesus Christ? You know, but it's just you mention church or you mention religion or you mention that you're a Christian or you mention that you're reading a book about God or whatever. And boom, that opens up a window in someone's life that they're really excited to talk about.
Yeah, and sharing struggles, that I've had some cool experiences there. And a previous neighbor, when we lived in an apartment, neighbors that lived underneath us, they fought, and we knew that they fought because we could hear them. We had hardwood floors, and so the sound just traveled right up. But he and I had we'd pass each other by and start talking, and just more and more, and we started becoming friends, and we'd sit out, and he'd sit outside and smoke, and I'd go out and talk with him. But just starting to enter into like how to engage marriage struggles and just even being open with Mindy and I and some of our marriage conflicts and just sharing, hey, this is how grace and forgiveness and being a Christian influences that. And so there were some really cool conversations there, sitting outside while he was taking a smoke break, getting away from his wife, just trying to love him. So I think that honesty and vulnerability and then speaking, hey, this is why the gospel matters. I need Jesus. It's not like, you know, Jesus puts me in this place where I'm better than everybody. It's like, no, actually, I'm broken, and this is why Christ matters. That creates this sense of like rapport and humility that I think people are more willing to kind of enter into than just sort of like, hey, you need Jesus, man.
Yeah, man. Thanks for always bringing the lighter out. I really appreciated living below you those couple of years. Yeah. And, I'm kidding. But I do think you're onto something there. Over the last year, we've been in some struggles, obviously, with health in our family. And I think you know, or I know that all the non-Christians around us are taking note of that, and they're wondering why we're not in more despair, more hopelessness, because people don't like to see you suffer, right? So if you can do that in a glorifying way to the Lord, that's going to draw in different conversations that you can have about the gospel and Jesus forever, really, and down the road.
All right, so listeners, identify these five networks. Who's in your family? Who do you live around? Who do you work with? Who do you hang out with? And then who do you see at shops, places that you frequent, whether that's a barbershop or a grocery store or a coffee shop or whatever? And then are you doing these things? One, are you praying for them? Two, have you invited them to anything, to your house or to go see a movie or to come to church or to, and, you know, have you invited them to something? Have you served them in any way? If not, how could you? Have you given them a resource? Have you said, hey, here's a good book I'm reading, or hey, came across this podcast I thought was interesting? Doesn't even have to be a Christian one, honestly. Just people share resources. And so it's a good way to sort of move the conversation to a more meaningful level. And then finally, have you sought opportunities to share the gospel with them? Have you opened up spiritual dialogue and had spiritual conversation? So hopefully that gives you a fuller vision for how actually you can do evangelism in really easy ways. And so to go back to the title of Tony Merida's post, don't overcomplicate it, y'all. Keep it simple. God put you where he put you for a reason. And he's placed you around some people who need Jesus. And you can do this.
The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or church leader in another context, we thank you for listening in, and we pray that this conversation might be helpful to you as you minister in your own context. As always, we love to hear from you, the listener. So if you have thoughts, questions, or future podcast topics, shoot us an email at podcast@cdomaha.com. And thank you for listening. We'll see you again next Wednesday for another episode of the Wednesday Conversation.